I'm Will Hedrick.
And I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Years and Timestamps, a book club podcast. And today, we're talking about George Orwell's Animal Farm, the 1945 satirical cornerstone of political thought.
Yeah, dude, it's really crazy. I didn't realize it came out like the year the war ended, like a couple months after. I think it came out like in October, and the war was over in like June or July or August, something like that. Like,
right, yeah.
Just a few months after, like, and he got it published in Europe. And yeah, man, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a like the second half of it goes into, and not even the second half, like pretty much the majority of it goes into the Stalinist era, mm-hmm. which is, you know, Stalin was the one that was coming into power during that period of time, or, you know, not just coming into power, but the, you know, majority of what was happening in Russia at that time was bending to his new ideologies for the country or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't do myself any justice when I was rereading this one. Like, if anything, when I pitched it, we should have been like, all right, and this is our homework. Read about the Russian Revolution.
Right, yeah. And become a little bit more educated on some of it.
Yeah, because as a story, it's just very interesting, and it shows you just the different flaws of the human being, like the human mind, and like the different mm-hmm. things we all fall prey to. Like, we all, like in this book, it's the idea that like we're getting oppressed, we can do it better because we care about our own needs, and they're just mm-hmm. going to take advantage of us. And then they take over, and then it's just like how easily they became corrupted. And by yeah. the end, I mean, we all know the train of thought of it, but by the end, they become just as bad, if not worse, than mm-hmm. what they started. And I mean, as a story by itself, like, that's really cool. And then just when you throw the history at it, like, I didn't realize Napoleon in this book was the reference for Stalin, you know. And then mm-hmm. the dogs that Napoleon has, like, his three dogs are straight up Stalin's KGB officers, and right, like, they go yeah. take care of everything he needs to. And mm-hmm. just like, he just, I don't know why I'm laughing, it's just, I guess, because it is a really funny cartoonistic representation of something super serious.
And, right, yeah. Because all those different things get referenced as the way that they are in this book, just in real life. You know, mm-hmm. people who are in those positions of power that just live to only reap what the people are, you know, creating. You know, they're pigs. They're literally pigs. And, you know, soldiers like the KGB, you know, they're like, they're the dogs of war, you know, like all these phrases and mm-hmm. things that get used. The people constantly use animals. Yes, that yeah. was going to be the next one. I, you know, boxer as the example. You know, animals are frequently used as reference points for describing personality traits in people because we've been next to animals and working with animals for our entire history. So the, yeah. comparing things to animals is a very human thing to do because they've always been around and they've always had some purpose for humanity, and they're all distinct purposes, you know. Like having a horse that plows your field and having a dog that guards your chickens and, you know, the whatever, you know, yeah. all the different things. And so that's why this book works so well yeah. is because George Orwell recognized that and was able to use it very effectively.
Yeah, he made, I don't know, it makes you feel like an animal, obviously. Like right, as you're reading yeah. about it, it's like, I am worked to the bone. Tirelessly, right, like yeah. given just enough so that I can survive.
Mm-hmm.
In I don't know, even as good of a society as we live in, it still feels like that's happening. You know, it still feels like our government is kind of bleeding us a little bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And without getting too political, it's just like reading that first section, it kind of hit home. It's like, you don't want to necessarily go exactly with the way old Major was saying. He's like, we need revolution. And then they just right. like overthrew.
Revolution is like a scary idea, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's what we did to have the greatest thing that we have that ever happened now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we overthrew our government 200 and whatever years ago. I don't know the exact number. Mm-hmm. A revolution happened then. Why doesn't one need to happen now?
Yeah, maybe more of like a cultural revolution too, so that we're all on the same page, doing the same things, working towards a good future rather than like a physical right. revolution or like, I don't know, revolution. Yeah, it's a scary word. So,
yeah, it's a really scary idea. There were times last year that I thought that maybe this was what like a first world revolution looks like in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I really thought that stuff was going to happen. And obviously a shit ton happened, you know?
Yeah.
Everything that happened in 2020, not to diminish anything that did happen, people did a lot of really crazy and brave things and made hopefully changes for the better. But I thought that it was going to become an actual revolution for a couple of weeks there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't entirely against it. If it was going to happen, I knew what side I was going to be on, and I was okay with it. I had made peace with it whenever I realized that I thought that it was going to happen.
Okay.
I'm glad that it didn't happen from a, you know, personal convenience standpoint, because now I don't have to be in a war. Or at least like a war of, in a very real sense. You know, like one could argue that we're already at war with each other and our government all the time anyway. But sometimes I still think, like, what if it did happen? Like, would we not potentially be on our way to a better place at this point if we had just gone the extra few steps to, you know, forcing change? Because right now, I don't know that we've actually forced anything to change.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like much has changed, even though we've gone through so much. And like, the more that's like been going on, it's like, I feel like we are getting more divided, which is like, whatever. I don't know.
Right, yeah.
It's hard too, because it's like, yeah, it's hard to think about it too, because like, I can't actually really imagine a civil war or like two sides being against each other physically. I can imagine everybody being at each other until they're red in the face.
Right.
But I can't actually
imagine. It's not anything that we've ever had to deal with. You know, yeah. We know about wars that happen elsewhere, mm-hmm. and we know about civil wars that are happening, you know, like even now and blah, 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 but they're over there and we don't deal with them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even have an immediate family member in the military, so I don't even have that one degree of connection to mm-hmm. something that might be happening elsewhere, you know, that they have to be involved with because we have to be involved in everything. So I don't even have that kind of a connection to it. It's an extremely difficult thing to sort of imagine, like what does that mean when the revolution actually does come to your doorstep?
Well, I mean, the most depressing thing for me reading this book is like, I kind of feel like I would be Boxer like in this revolution. Like I would just put my head down and keep working and being like, mm-hmm. as long as I can do my part here, like just.
Right. Certainly if it's something that you believe in, because he believed in it from the beginning, right? Whenever the revolution was still in the best interest of everybody because it had only just happened.
It's just, it's sad that Boxer was so willing to believe whomever was in charge.
Mm-hmm. He also represents the uneducated working class, right? And that's part of what makes those kinds of governments so successful is they keep their people down and uneducated so that they can't think.
And the big part about not being able to think is like Boxer lived through fighting through the revolution with Snowball. Mm-hmm. Right, He's like, I remember Snowball doing this. And Squealer was like, no, you don't.
Right, yeah.
Like, you don't remember Snowball doing that because he didn't. And Napoleon said that he's been lying the whole time.
Right. We found new documents that show that this is true, but you can't read them.
Yeah. He was uneducated, but he couldn't have gone any further either. Like, that was the interesting part is like he was boxed.
Yeah, right.
He was forced into his own little area, though, like where he couldn't get smarter. I guess that's what the point is.
In the story, it kind of... It forces him to be stupid.
But that's the point, right? Like, they're forced to be dumb. Like, Boxer, even if you...
But even in the beginning, they were all trying to learn. Mm-hmm. He just couldn't do it. And some of the other animals were too stupid to do it as well. Because even though, like, this whole story is an allegory for everything, mm-hmm. the premise of it is that they're on a farm. They're farm animals, right? So they have to maintain, you know, some trueness to being a farm animal, and like sheep are stupid.
Right.
But even though like they do have to maintain animals being accurate representations of animals because they are literally in relation to humans in this story, like the humans are there and the humans were on top at first. It is still supposed to just be like, you know, they can't learn. They're not allowed to learn, or they're being forced to, you know, not care about learning.
Well, that is, I mean, I feel like you're exactly right too. That is showing the middle class or whatever that like they're only being taught so much. Like we were only forced to go to so many years of school before like we were just released out into the wild. Like we're not really being challenged to keep learning and to keep growing. So like that's why these concepts are still so hard for me to grasp. Like we read this sophomore year of high school and it didn't mean anything to me. And like right now I'm trying to go back and learn like, I wish I was smart enough to talk about all of the political things, like the economical things that they were referencing in this, because like we were saying before, there are Marxist and communist and socialist ideas in this. And like, not that any of those are outright bad on a whole, but like, they're not, I don't know. It's like, see, even now I'm dancing around the subject because I don't know enough to talk about
right,
it. And that's like, that's why I feel like I'm Boxer, dude. Like I'm just forced into this same area where just getting through, just getting by without having like any sort of focus, just being good enough at everything. Mm-hmm. Like I never learned the lesson this book was trying to teach until I'm 30.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like I'm just now getting it. And I mean, I guess it's better now than never, but
Right.
But am I now Benjamin, the old donkey that doesn't make any change and just still keeps his head down? That's still part of the problem.
Right.
I don't think I'm Claudia or whatever that other horse's name was that was just interested
Clover?
In those. Yeah, thank you. Claudia.
Oh, no. Clover was like the one that stayed around. I can't remember the name of the one that ran off to the other farm because she was like just, you know, self-absorbed and airheaded.
Well, and that's another thing, too. Like, I mean, they all kind of reference different groups in society and Boxer has some sort of sympathy towards him. Like, you can kind of sympathize with him. And yet at the same time, you're like, you fucking idiot. Like, how do you you were there fighting alongside Snowball. And then who do I want to be? Do I want to be Snowball who gets then like exiled?
I don't think you want to be anybody in this story. I don't think anybody
the original guy.
Yeah.
You don't want it to go back.
He goes and drinks himself to death afterwards.
Yeah. What was his name again? Farmer
Maggot.
Might as well be. But
no, it was the Manor Farm.
Manor Farm. Yeah. You don't want it to go back to the way it was. But when it was the Manor Farm and everyone's like, oh, no, it was definitely still worse back then.
Right.
When the first few years it went well, that was interesting how it like it didn't go bad immediately because it wouldn't. You wouldn't think.
Well, the pigs had to learn as well. And so they, you know, in their education, they realized that they were so much smarter than all the other animals that they could take advantage of the situation.
They not only thought that they could, but they thought that it was like they needed to. Like if they didn't, the farm would collapse. I feel like they end up convincing themselves like that if they don't take these liberties, they're like, if they didn't drink the milk and eat the apples, they wouldn't be able to navigate all the different things for the farm and make sure that they're safe for when the Manors are definitely coming back. You wouldn't want it to be like the Manors they were back. That's so interesting. That's why as a whole is just like a fictional story without even the history. It's interesting and you can kind of see the cruel face of humanity. It's a cool story, but now reading about history and trying to be smarter about it, I guess it's just it's a whole nother level. And it's such a short book. It's like, I need to reread it again after I've read like that little paper and try to.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's like 50 pages or something like that. It's like crazy quick.
Do you enjoy reading it though? Do you think it was fun?
Yeah. I mean, it's an enjoyable, might not be the right word, but it's an engaging story to go through. You're never sitting there thinking like, oh God, blah, blah, I wish I was reading something else or anything like that. You know, it doesn't feel like a traditional homework assignment where you're just like, I guess I have to get through this, you know, but it's extremely simple. I had to buy a Kindle edition of it because even though you had gotten the paperback versions for us to read, I had accidentally left it here while I was watching a friend's house. Mm-hmm. I paid like 90 cents for the Kindle edition. I was like, well, that's just because it's a million years old, right? Like, there's 800 editions of this, but Jesus Christ, it was worth 90 cents because the editing was terrible on it on that version. Like, there was just like paragraphs were like shrunk together where they should have obviously, you know, been paragraphs. There was just lacking of punctuation. Things were spelt wrong. Words were smushed together when they were supposed to be spaces. Like, it was just terrible. It was awful.
Wow.
Like, it looked like a fucking BuzzFeed article. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, this one in 1984 were free on Audible. Like with the membership, the narration was pretty good. I listened to it and I think it had a bit of a different intro than the books had. Like I remember, well, I mean, I didn't read all of the intro because it was like an intro and then a preface.
Right.
Yeah. Like they had two of them and I read like the intro because it talked about George Orwell and his name was like Eric Blair and his pen name being George Orwell and just a little bit about him and writing and what he was trying to do when it was published, that sort of thing.
Eric Arthur Blair.
Ooh, and did it. Eric Blair.
Only lived to be 47. Not even. 46 and like a half.
That's a bummer. What happened?
I don't know.
Drank himself to death. He's the Manor Farm. Farmer Manor.
Why did he die? Tuberculosis. Okay. He had tuberculosis, and that's what killed him. Good old TB. What got everybody back then.
Damn, yeah. Well, did you take any notes or no?
I didn't, no.
I ended up just writing a bunch of stuff down. I thought it was interesting that in Old Major's speech, they called him comrade, like they called everyone comrades.
Yeah. I think that was entirely intentional to be so obviously referencing the Russians. Yeah.
Like, that's what I thought. Okay.
Like just so that it didn't go over anybody's head back then. Like he was just like, we're talking about the Russians, guys.
Yeah. Men are enemies. Animals are comrades. Men are the only ones who take without giving back. I wrote that down. I was like, that's interesting. I put a big question mark on it because I was like, are they not giving back? Because couldn't you argue that like left to run amok, it ends up becoming what happened? Like, because the pigs, that's how they convince themselves that their job in the leadership position is more important than them being out on the field working. They're like, no, we're giving back. Like we have to delegate, let them know what to do. If they were Like, Boxer right. doesn't know what to do on his own. He just knows how to work hard.
Right, yeah. I think that what they mean there is humans don't produce anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, from a very literal standpoint, like, right. you know, we don't like produce milk or fruit eggs or, you know, anything consumable.
We're not pulling plows. We're not carrying anything. Yeah, we're not really doing much.
The only thing that we really do is we're just like, we just think and we create things. Like, technology only exists because of humanity. So that's like, you know, a gift to the world. But who does that serve? That only serves people. That doesn't serve other species really that much. So I guess that's sort of what he was kind of saying there.
I see.
But it's also like a thing to say whenever you're trying to, you know, it's just like, you know, smear campaigns in any political race here in the States. You know, it's like you want to get the people mad at your opponent so that they're on your side.
Even if you're doing the same thing, which is what I thought was funny about it, because it was like the hypocritical pigs are just like, humans aren't giving us anything. And then the second, like, they get rid of the humans and they're like, oh, shit, what were we giving them except for our bodies after a year or two?
Right. Yeah. Like,
oh, yeah, we got to learn how to do something here. Mm-hmm. And then their contribution was the brain power that was the same thing the humans were bringing to the table. I think
the pigs are the only ones that don't produce anything once the humans are gone, because
what did they produce before?
Meat, which the other animals can't have.
And you can't eat no eating animals.
So, like, everybody else still produces something, you know, like the horses are able to, they're, you know, they work harder than anybody else because they're the strongest ones.
The
sheep have wool that ultimately can be sold, but they also, you know, sheep milk exists.
The pigs are like, they're going to eat us if we don't get it.
That was the only thing we did for the farmers was be et.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know, it's funny and hypocritical. And then also at the same time, too, when they make the rule, right when they take over, they're like, no animal shall eat another animal. I was like, don't dogs and cats specifically eat, like...
Yeah, aren't they carnivorous?
Yeah. At least a semi-carnivorous lifestyle. Like, I know dogs can probably get away with roots and stuff, but I think cats, if they go vegan, they go blind. It's a Joe Rogan joke, but like, I think he did his research on that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty positive vegan cats go blind. Have to be, you know, they can't get away from that kind of protein. Yeah.
And then I also thought it was funny that, like, they wanted to make all the wild animals also comrades, like the squirrels and rabbits and rats and stuff. And the birds, like, in the trees, and then how the cat was like, no, we're friends, you can land.
Oh, right, yeah.
I don't know, I just thought that was silly. Rats were voted comrade except by the three dogs. Oh, no, rats were part of the household, I guess. But then wild animals were voted also comrades. Rats were voted comrade except by the three dogs and cat. The cat voted for and against. The cat was just always voting.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the cat doesn't seem to represent anything in particular. I think the cat is just a cat because it's funny.
Yeah.
George Orwell was just like, I don't like cats. How can I make fun of cats? Or something, right? I don't think that it represents anything.
Yeah, I mean, my notes were pretty much all the stuff we talked about. Like, I mean, Sugar Candy Mountain, I wrote, was heaven. Because, like, by the end, like, once Napoleon was working, or not Napoleon, sorry, Napoleon was working so hard. No, once... Boxer.
No,
Boxer. I spaced out so hard. Once Boxer was working so hard, he kept fantasizing about how he was going to go to, like...
Oh, he was ready to retire. Yeah. He was excited to get to the pasture and just relax.
Mm-hmm.
He was hoping that they would maybe let Benjamin retire with him, like, a year early, because Benjamin was, like, his best bud.
Yeah, not only is Benjamin never going to retire, but they weren't going to let him retire. And
yeah.
Like that pasture, I feel like they filled with other shit. Like, they were already using it for
something else. There was one pasture
that
they were going to use initially to be the pasture, but then they repurposed it for something and then got a smaller one elsewhere that Boxer thought he was going to go.
But it was probably just like that, like what we say to kids when, like, we couldn't keep the dog, we took him out to a farm.
Yeah.
That's probably exactly what they're doing to Boxer. Like, oh no, we got rid of that one pasture, but I swear this new one is even better. It's been like this untouched spot for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Ever since Maynard put it back in, back in the before time.
Right.
Squealer, I read in that essay, was just straight up like propagandist for Stalin. So I was like, that was cool. But I mean, probably not cool in the history time. I just thought it was cool how they related that. Yeah, everything else is just like, I felt it this time when Boxer went off to become glue.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we I remember reading in high school, it didn't hit me.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I wasn't paying attention, probably. Like, I didn't really care.
Mm-hmm.
And then this time I was like, no. And Benjamin was like freaking out. And then everyone at the farm was like, wait, Benjamin, he's running? He's never running.
Right, yeah.
He's like, can't you idiots read? And they're like, no, read it to us. He's like, that's the knacker.
Yeah.
And then Boxer like, huh? And it even said like with one hit of his mighty hoof, he like could have opened the door, but.
Because he was so weak.
Yeah.
Yeah. And old at that point too. He wasn't not even just like weak because he had, you know, worked himself to death, but.
And is that when they got the fake banknotes? Like, when did they get fake banknotes?
Yeah, that happens whenever they sell the wood pile to Frederick.
Oh.
The next door farm.
Pinche Frederick.
Yeah, Pinche Frederick.
It's funny how, like, they start running the animal farm that they rename it. Mm-hmm. Hoof and Horn. Hammer and Sickle, which was the Russian Revolution.
Yeah, thank you. The Soviet Union.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Forgot where I was going with that. It was funny. Nope, I don't know what was funny about it.
Well, while you think about that, we can take a second to hear from our sponsor.
Oh, got it. Okay, it came back to me. So it's funny how the animals had to, like, the first few years that they took over, they mm-hmm. were able to make it work and they had more food than ever. But then after a few years, they had to end up associating with human society. Like, they couldn't get away from using the economy. Mm-hmm. Like, they couldn't get away with just being by themselves.
Well, it's because they wanted more. They wanted to build the windmill.
Right.
Snowball decided that that was something that they needed to do to make their lives easier. But to make a windmill that would generate electricity, that, you know, requires things that they can't produce on their own.
Right.
And so that was the justification for getting into that. And but it's like a necessary thing for survival. Like, they didn't need to build the windmill. If they had just continued what they were doing at the beginning, which was just working the land so that they could all eat in whatever, you know, like, they would have been probably OK. But yes. Yeah. They had to corrupt their ideals because they wanted more.
Yeah. They ran off Snowball mm-hmm. and they were like, oh, well, we still need to do the windmill, even though it was Snowball's idea and he was a bad guy. Remember like how Napoleon kind of twisted it too?
Mm-hmm.
Napoleon made it like he wasn't corrupting their ideals. He was doing it despite Snowball. You know?
That was just an example of everything that he continued to do after that, right? Mm-hmm. He was against the windmill because he didn't think it was necessary, or he was saying he didn't think it was necessary. And then once he gets rid of Snowball, he's able to be like, I was always into the windmill. Snowball was just wrong for wanting to go about it this other way, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to spin the narrative in a way that made him better by making everybody else worse. And so, you know, that's what he did after that. You know, all the changing in Snowball's history with the animal farm and the way that he went about trying to figure out if he was going to sell the wood to either Pilkington or Frederick. Everything that he did was always that sort of creating an issue so that he could come back and denounce the issue,
right?
Even though he was the one that created it, mm-hmm. right? As, you know, like a stratagem for making himself the hero and giving the people that he rules over something to be afraid of and know that they have to rely on him to resolve.
And then you have your propagandist going through, like, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want it to be like Manor Farm again.
Yeah, right,
you wouldn't
exactly.
want old Farmer Manor back or whatever. This book was good. Like, the economy of words it used. It's short and sweet. It does it quick. Mm-hmm. Like, I was thinking of lesson plans after reading it the first time. I was like, we could knock this out in a week and have a quiz.
A quiz. That's what we want, is a quiz.
Yeah, I know. What I would end up doing is, like, we'd read it all week and have, like, 30, 40-minute listens of the audiobook, since the audiobook's, like, 3 hours or whatever.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I would have them write down every day what they remember. So, like, as good as they can do, like, mm-hmm. some people might have a great week and they remember everything that happened, you know, and they write down everything every day. But, like, it's more of a completion grade. So just do your best. And then at the end, I think I would try to have it be a creative writing exercise. Like, I'd have them put together their week's worth of essays, read them, mm-hmm. and then write how they would end the book. And then we would listen to the ending of the book as a class. That way, like, everyone wins. It would just be a completion grade. It'd be fun. Yeah. Like, they would be getting better as writers, mm-hmm. and, like, thinking creatively. It wouldn't have the pressure of we're having a quiz. It would be kind of fun because you'd get to put all your old work together, you know?
Right.
That was my lesson plan, actually. Like, I really did sit around and think about that. And I was like, that would be kind of fun, I think, for a class to do.
Yeah. Too bad school's not allowed to be fun. Can't have fun at school.
I know. Mr. Davis did a good job, I thought, of trying to make it fun. Like, he came in out of
there
nowhere.
There were teachers that were obviously better than others.
For sure, but, for sure.
Yeah.
Of course, the reason I'm thinking of him is because this is when we read the book. He was in his class.
Mm.
But I don't know. He did a good job of making it as interesting as he could. He came in halfway through the year.
Yeah.
It's pretty abnormal.
Right.
Shout out, Mr. Davis. Do you think about your writing and reading English teachers a lot from doing this podcast? I think about him all the time.
Yeah.
This man, Jairus, I think about every now and then. I just remember I was so nervous she was going to call on me to read my paper on Hiroshima because I was like, I found out pretty quickly that she was not into bombing them, which I was like, I was like, oh, we were supposed to bomb.
Right. Yeah.
Because it ended the war, right?
That was book like, was the first time that we were ever given something in an educational capacity that told us what happened afterwards.
Right.
Every other story that we had ever gotten up to that point, which again, we were freshmen, you know, I don't think that it's always fair to ask children to think about the weighing of options in war, but, yeah. Up until that point, all we had been told was, you know, they attacked Pearl Harbor. We decided to go to war and it was becoming so difficult that we decided, well, we're going to do this thing that we just invented and we're going to do it twice. And because of that, Japan withdrew and the tide turned. Like that's the way that it had always been presented up until that point. But then reading Hiroshima, I was like, or Hiroshima is, you know, how you would pronounce it more accurately. Reading that book, I really realized like, we might not have been the good guys. We might have made a really, really, really bad decision there.
Yeah, big choices were made.
Choices that I'm not qualified to make by any means, but I just can't imagine being able to justify doing that to two civilian populations.
I mean, if they knew something that we don't about, like, because wasn't it just like a race?
That's the sort of phrasing
machine
that, like, Napoleon would say, right? Like, there are things that we know that you can't understand.
Well, no, you know, I mean, like, I'm definitely justifying their crazy decision off of something I don't know. Like, I don't even know enough about the war at that time to know if some very obvious counter
effect. It was an effective move. I mean, it was a move that was effective. It pulled one of the three major countries on the other side out of the war. It was effective. It achieved the goal that it had. But, you know.
But it's like, I wonder why we didn't do that to Russia or to Germany, or, you know, like, why did we go for Japan? Because they were the closest, you know, like, because they bombed
we didn't bomb them immediately after Pearl Harbor. When we went to war and we fought in the Japanese islands, like Iwo Jima, you know, like everybody knows about that story and everything. Like, we went and fought really hard battles for a couple of years or something like that. And it was becoming evident that we would not gain any traction on that theater. And so, I mean, there's obviously probably a lot more to it than just those things, but those are, you know, that's like the Cliff Notes version. It's like, we were not making progress. This would help us make progress.
Oh, the end. Yeah. War over.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, what book would you want to read if you had to reread one from high school again? Instead of, because like I made us do Animal Farm.
What would I want to read again?
I already told you the two that I would go for next.
Yeah, I think that I could maybe gain the most from reading 1984 again, because I remember reading it and I remember enjoying it and I remember getting a lot from it. But when I look back on it, I don't remember what any of that was. So it didn't stick, or I didn't get the right things.
Right.
Same. It's not the most enjoyable one.
I got you.
You know, and it's just on my mind right now because we were just talking about it, but Hiroshima was, when I read it, I remember thinking like, holy shit, this is like important and good. And like, I wasn't ever bored. It was engaging. And I remember being happy for having read that book. But there's got to be another one that's like actually just enjoyable as well that we had to read. I can't remember everything that we had to read.
Even back then, I was listening to audiobooks. I went to the library, and I'm pretty sure I got the book on tape of Hiroshima. Yeah. I was listening to it, and the guy just kept, like, he had the strongest whistle on his S's. Every time, Hiroshima. I just thought that was so funny. But I also remember that one being pretty impactful. Like, I wasn't mad that that was the book that they asked us to read. I was just upset at my timing for forcing it, like, 2 days before school started.
Right. Yeah, I put off the reading until like maybe the week before the semester started as well.
First week of school.
Yeah.
We were reading that book.
Hiroshima and then
that's what it should have been,
House on Mango Street, which we've, you know, complained about on like every other episode of this show the whole time we've been doing it.
They should have just had us read it the first week of school. Like, fuck all that reading over the summer stuff. Like, who does that? Who cares?
Summer assignments are outrageous to me, in theory even. It just doesn't make any sense to me that you're going to expect children to do work over the summer and not only do it, but retain anything that you're expecting them to gain from it.
Yeah.
So that they can come back to school and talk about it months later.
Yeah, that's repulsive.
It's fucking stupid. It logically makes no sense at all.
There's so many assumptions there too.
It's some sort of just ridiculous puritanical thought, yeah. Right? Where it's just like, we can't let them have fun. They're children. Their job is to learn. You know? No, yeah, that's what it is. It's just like some like old holdover puritanical policy from, you know, who knows back when, some terrible maniac who didn't believe in the goodness of humanity was like, we need to force children to not be like happy.
We need to put them in almost 8-to-5 jobs their entire lives until they got into the workforce and have to do it themselves.
Yeah.
Pushing papers the whole way, the school system.
Right. I just remembered I really liked Fahrenheit 451.
That's what I was going to say. Book. Yeah, Fahrenheit 451 I really liked. 1984 I remember being one of the biggest ones for me, like the biggest like wow moments. Mm-hmm. Animal Farm didn't really stand out to me, but now it would, but mm-hmm. we just read it, so don't need to.
Maybe because it was so short and so early for you.
Yeah,
you
know? Probably. And honestly, I downloaded Beowulf because it was free.
Yeah.
And I felt like that would be cool to maybe touch back onto because it was like an epic poem. And I remember that being like very difficult. You know, it's on par with like the Iliad.
And
I never read the Iliad either.
I haven't read it because it's like a million bajillion miles long or something like that.
Really?
Right? It's really long. It is my memory when I've tried to look at it.
And if it's in poem form, it sounds like it's going to confuse me.
Yeah, the delivery method that it has is definitely not typical.
Huh. I guess but
it is something that I've always wanted to read because I always really like Greek mythology for one.
Yeah.
And then I'm still a huge fan of Troy, that movie with Brad Pitt and Orlando Bloom that came out in like 2007 or something like that.
That movie was cool.
That movie rules.
I feel like we watched it at my house one time.
Probably. Anytime that I could get anybody to watch it, I was watching it. I loved that movie back then.
For some reason, I feel like we were watching it at my house, and then I fell asleep, and you and my mom just ended up watching the rest of it together.
That like, is what happened. Now that you say it, I'm like a million percent positive that that's what happened.
And then I fell asleep, and y'all just finished it.
Yeah, I was like, well, I guess we're going to watch this. 2004 was when it came out.
That movie was cool.
Look at Brad Pitt. What a handsome man. Wish I was half that handsome. Jesus Christ. Wish I was half that rich. I wish I was half anything that Brad Pitt has.
Yeah, he's killing it. Well, what book do you want to kill it for next week?
Yeah, next up on the list, I was doing some math last night trying to figure out, we've got 5 weeks before we need to start reading Dune.
Hell yeah.
We're going to read Dune for the last week of September and then the first 3 weeks of October. And then the movie comes out on the 22nd, which is a Friday or something. So we'll do a Monday episode that weekend.
Dude, that's awesome.
So we've got 5 weeks that we need to kill before then. We're going to do 2 weeks on this book.
Okay.
And then we'll figure out what we're going to do for 3 weeks. We also should be having a Monday episode this next week for The Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf.
Ooh.
The animated movie that released on Netflix like 2 days ago or something.
Oh, okay.
So, that's going to be soon. That might not be this next coming Monday, but it will be coming very shortly. Y'all can look out for that and go watch it.
I can't believe I missed it. I had been waiting for this and telling you guys about it.
I sort of missed it too. I forgot the day that it was supposed to happen, but then all of a sudden my Google feed was just like, people like it.
8/22.
8/22, is that what it was? Yeah, it's the 23rd today. So maybe it did come out yesterday. I don't know. Anyway, it's out. Today's Monday, the 23rd. You're going to listen to this on Wednesday, the 25th.
WitcherCast coming back.
Yeah, we're going to get a little sneak peek at the return of WitcherCast. And then in December, the real return of WitcherCast. Dune's coming up in the next 5-ish weeks. So get ready to start on that and then get ready for that movie. What we're reading for the next 2 weeks, though, it's a science fiction thriller novel called Reclaimed by Madeline Rue. We're going to read the first half of it, so through chapter 16, stop at 17. It's about 150 pages, so a light load for what we normally go through.
And just so you guys know, when I had to buy it on the Audible app, there were two Reclaimed books. Mine was the second one. Make sure it's Madeline Rue, like Will said, and the cover has what looks like a girl's face on it with an eyeball. Like, you can see her eye.
There's something like, sort of like android-y about the look or something like that. It's very sci-fi.
I'm really excited too, because it's in the thriller genre, which we don't dabble in that much. But like, I feel like every night I go down this creepy zone of like listening to true scary stories online. And I'm like, ooh, let me get spooked out. So I'm really looking forward to this. I think it'll be fun.
I think so too.
You guys know how to find us at anchor.fm/ears-amps. That has links to all our social media and then a way you can support us directly. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at ear_stamps.
Right.
And dogearsandtimestamps@gmail.com. If you'd like to send us an email, let us know what you think about the podcast. A special shout out to Ashley for our post-production.
That's about it, right? We'll see y'all maybe on Monday with Nightmare of the Wolf. We'll definitely see y'all next Wednesday with the first half of Reclaimed. And if that's the first time that we see y'all, then you'll see us immediately after that for Nightmare of the Wolf. Get ready for those things. It's exciting. Witcher's back. Witcher's back, everybody. I'm Will Hedrick.
I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Ears and Timestamps.